You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, episode 13. It's kind of like that Iron Curtain theme. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including Will Decker joining The Office, Trek on Amazon Prime, remembering Gene Roddenberry's birthday, a preview of IDW's November offerings, Klingon Monopoly, Vulcan coming back in the next JJ movie, a David Foster Trek series, Star Trek's toughest villains, and the favorite Enterprise design poll results. In our feature, we'll be talking about the Romulans. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm actually fully packed and ready for my trip to Tokyo and then to America. So, big time up here.
Oh, getting ready to board the shuttlecraft.
Yes. I'm going to circle around America and examine it, just like Scotty and Captain Kirk in the motion picture, and then we'll slowly dock on the West Coast.
Excellent idea. It's too bad we don't have transporter technology. It would make that trip a lot easier for you.
I know. I probably would have gone home once in the last 3 years if we had transporter technology.
True. Well, I tell you, down here today, last week I was coming to you from a demon planet, and this week I am broadcasting to you from Ferenginar because it has just been pouring rain here for the past couple of days. But it's nice and cool, so can't complain too much, but I sure know how Quark and Rom and they all feel when they go home.
I hope you've turned a nice profit.
Yeah. So, you know, before we kick off news today, I wanted to give a quick shout out to one of our listeners, Jeff Mahan, who left us a great review of The Ready Room on iTunes. And I guess you saw that, didn't you, Greg?
I did. I was really happy to see a review. I hate asking, you know, people to review us, but it does feel really good when people go on and say nice things about us. So thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jeff. It was great to hear your comments, and we're so glad that you're enjoying the show. And like Greg said, yeah, we don't really go around asking for people to go and review. But if you do enjoy the show and you get the Enhanced Podcast in iTunes, please feel free to leave us a message there and rate us, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, it does help.
Yeah, it does help. We know we have listeners.
Yes.
We're not just broadcasting into deep space.
Right.
So Greg, you know, you caught a lot of flack a couple of weeks ago after you praised Eureka and got the show canceled the next day. And then last week, you started talking about Leverage, and I think you gave a lot of people a bit of a scare. And looking at our notes for today, I see that you've got another show in your targets.
Well, I really think it's time. I mean, this is a show that's been on the air for years and years. It's always gotten great ratings, and now their lead actor has left the show. Maybe it's time for it all to be done. Speaking of The Office, which, yes, okay, it's a great show.
I've only seen a few episodes of The Office, actually, because we don't get it over here, and I just haven't, you know, gotten the DVDs. I've seen a few. I've seen the original Office a bit more than the American version. So, is there a Star Trek connection here?
Right. I'm not simply trying to get The Office canceled. There's a bit of a connection in that, make sure I get his name right, Stephen Collins is going to be joining the cast for a couple episodes at least. He was Will Decker on the motion picture, who captained the Enterprise briefly. So he'll be on the show. So if you're a fan of the motion picture or Fifth Heaven, feel free to tune in.
All right. So he's going to be now taking command of an office for a bit, and hopefully no sentient space probes will be coming by his office there. Maybe it'll be canceled before that happens.
I hope
not. Now that you've talked about it on the Ready Room.
Very possibly. So another show that was canceled actually before it even got made was Star Trek Phase 2, which we've talked a little bit about before. And one interesting thing about that show is that it was turned into the movie we were just talking about, the motion picture. So they actually took the pilot episode and lengthened it to feature length. And an interesting thing has been done. I found this on YouTube, and we'll include a link to it. But someone has taken this movie and shrunk it back down to TV size. So it's actually, it's about 50 minutes long. It's split up into commercial break sections. It flows more like a TV show. Did you get a chance to check this out, Chris?
I've seen a little bit of it. Now, you're talking about Honey, I Shrunk the Motion Picture, right? I saw a little bit of it. I mean, it's an interesting idea. I saw the beginning where they really play out, it felt like anyway, most of the battle scene between the Klingons and the V'ger cloud.
Right.
And then eventually they get into some title sequence there, a very kind of 70s looking title sequence.
Yeah, it reminded me of the Voyager episode where I believe the teaser is only a Borg cube getting destroyed by species 8472. It's like, I don't know, 7 seconds.
Scorpion, yeah.
And then time for the opening credits.
Yeah, but that was really quick, 7 seconds here.
Yeah.
And when I went into the credits here, I have to be honest with you. At first, I wasn't quite sure what I was watching.
Mm.
And so when I got to the credits part, I kept waiting for a joke.
Right.
I kept waiting for like them to show one of the characters and give him like a funny name or something like that. But I was flashing back to the old Saturday Night Live sketch
right.
of Love Boat, The Next Generation,
right.
where they had Isaac come in, you know, as Geordi LaForge and do his fingers out at the screen. But but it never happened.
No.
So this was actually a serious thing here,
it
right?
Is.
They're trying to recreate the idea of what would have been the episode In Thy Image.
Right. And people have actually, there's a big community of fan editors. There's a quite famous fan edit of the original Star Wars movie called Star Wars Revisited, which has been getting some press recently. Star Trek composer Michael Giacchino actually watched it in the last couple of weeks and was praising it on Twitter. And so it's basically people going back through and saying, you know what, this movie is good, but if we made a few changes here and there, in this case some big changes, shrinking it back down, suddenly I can make it a great film. And I don't know that the motion picture needed it, but it is interesting to see it maybe more like it would have been had this 1970s TV show been made. It would have been a very different direction for Star Trek, for sure.
Yeah, you know, I will agree with people. I typically put the motion picture at the bottom of my list, with Star Trek V being at the very bottom and then the motion picture. You know, but a lot of reasons for that are the pacing of the movie, some elements like that. It does have a fairly interesting concept behind the story. And I will say that it does have a very Star Trek feeling to it. I kind of like the idea of recutting it and trying to focus in on the story and not so much of the just the plotting, like we've got to fill up 2 hours here, kind of approach that was going on in the original.
Yeah. So like I said, we'll have a link in the show notes. So check it out on YouTube or there's various other places you can get it. But one official place you can get Star Trek episodes is now Amazon Prime, which Amazon Prime, correct me if I'm wrong here, Chris, but it's sort of an expedited or cheaper shipping option for Amazon.
Yeah, it's I'm an Amazon Prime member here in Japan, but we don't get as many of the goodies as people in the States get. For example, we have no video streaming here, so and that's what this is all about, and that's kind of the attraction. I have it because I order quite a lot of things from Amazon that I can't pick up in local stores as easily. And I like the Prime because basically sometimes I can order something in the morning and it'll show up later in the afternoon, you know, so it's kind of a good deal. And it's a lot cheaper here. It's like, I don't know how much I pay. It's like 3,500 yen or something.
Oh, that's
it's
not
like,
bad.
You know, it's not bad. It's like $40 or something like that compared to the $79
right.
in the US.
Yeah, so it's interesting on Prime now, or just Amazon in general, if you search for Star Trek, you of course get the listings of all the DVD box sets, but you also get a little link to, you can either buy an episode and watch it now, or it just tells you, sign up for Amazon Prime and you can stream it. And they've got all the Star Trek shows other than the animated series. They even have Deep Space Nine, which I'm pretty sure Netflix won't get until next month or later this year sometime.
October first, something right. like that, when Netflix gets Deep Space Nine. So yeah, and Amazon somehow they managed to get their hands on it ahead of Netflix. It was quite a big win for them. I can't speak firsthand, you know, on any quality difference right. between the Netflix streaming or the Amazon Prime streaming, since we don't have access to those. But I will say, especially in the U.S., because of the size of the country and depending on where you live, you know, it can take a few days for you to get things from Amazon unless you want to really pay for the overnight shipping. So Amazon Prime, I think, is quite a good deal. And I actually was an Amazon Prime member when I lived in the States for a little while, a few years back. So I think it's a good deal in general. And then if you can get Star Trek streaming as part of that package, it's right. really a big win, yeah. I think.
Well, definitely. If you're,
in some ways, maybe more attractive than Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, if you're thinking of signing up for Netflix just to get Star Trek, that's going to cost you more than Amazon is. And now, Netflix, I think, has a bigger selection in general, and they might even have some of the movies available.
One benefit, I think, though, to Netflix for people is that if you have a device like an Apple TV or I think in the U.S., I think you did PlayStation, I'm not sure, but I know there are a number of devices like that.
PlayStation 3, the Xbox.
Netflix, that have Netflix integration.
Right.
And in that sense, you would be able, like I have an Apple TV here, and I would love to be able to have Netflix integration in my Apple TV here and be able to just pull up any Star Trek episode that I want.
Right.
Right there through my Apple TV. So that's a big win. So really depends on your setup here, but it's great to see the competition that you are able to get Star Trek in both of these places now.
Yeah, and what you're starting to see, because these streaming deals are available, is also the DVD sets are coming down in price. We saw this week that Amazon dropped the season disc down to, I believe, around $32 a piece, and the whole series you can get for about $200, which is way lower than it was. I remember last time I was looking in a big box store at these prices.
Yeah, it is. I bought the Next Generation, the entire series at one time, and I bought the entire Voyager series at one time back around 2006. And I think I was able to get them for around $250 to $300 per series at that time. But I looked and I looked and I was waiting, and I finally found this great price, and I pulled the trigger on it then. So it was normally running quite a bit more than that to get all the sets. Yeah. So. Boy, it's just, you know, I've had all of the series seasons, including the animated series now, going back, starting from around 2003. I think I wrapped up my collection around 2006.
Nice.
And then TAS came out after. Mm-hmm. And if I could have gotten them for $32 a season, boy, I would have been in heaven because I paid, you know, a few of them I got for around that price. But there are some seasons, you know, where I paid the whole like $128 or something like that for them. So boy, it's really a steal these days.
And it's really a steal if you can do one of these streaming deals. The only question is, when are these deals going to run out, and when are you going to have to actually buy the sets in order to keep watching Star Trek whenever you want? But right now, this is a great time to join either Netflix or Amazon Prime and watch along with us, or one of the shows like Dork Trek, these people who are watching the shows.
Oh, most definitely. Well, you know, one reason that we have all of this great Star Trek to watch is because of a man named Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek in the first place and has just been an inspiration to so many of us for so many years now. And it was really a sad thing when he passed away. And actually, Greg, you and I, rewatching Unification this week, were reminded of his passing when Unification Part 1 title screen comes up with just a remembering Gene from when he passed in 91. And it would have been his 90th birthday here just a few days ago.
Yeah, wow. It's incredible to think. We've got so many of the people who worked on the original Star Trek are still around, actually still doing the convention circuit. But Gene really hasn't been... It's crazy to think, but Gene hasn't been here for the whole revival of Star Trek. Like, he was there, of course, for the movies and most of the 80s. But as we've talked about, the real golden age of Star Trek was this the 90s, especially the later 90s, when so much of Star Trek was on the air. And that was after he'd already left us. And it's good to remember that it's not, while many other people were involved in these Star Trek shows, it all came from this guy's one idea back in the 60s. It was a big, big idea.
Yeah, it's incredible. And so lucky that he had that idea and persevered, you know, because it wasn't necessarily well received in the beginning. And even after the original series was on and it was canceled and the fans had to kind of fight to keep the dream alive through the 70s. And even when The Next Generation came around, it only really came into its own around the time that Gene Roddenberry passed away. And so I think he would be very proud if he could see what it's become now, for sure.
So
we remember you, Gene, on your 90th birthday.
What did they say? The great bird of the galaxy?
Yes, the great bird of the galaxy.
Very good. So speaking of these times when Gene was intimately involved in the creation of Star Trek, of course, that was the 60s and the original series, and we keep talking about this comic book series from IDW that's coming, which is sort of the reimagination of original series episodes through the lens of the Abrams reboot. And I actually don't think book one has come out yet, but they're previewing the book three, which we're moving on from Where No Man Has Gone Before, and we're moving on to The Galileo 7. Do you remember this episode better than I do?
Oh, maybe, because I actually just watched this episode a few days ago. It's an interesting episode. It's one of those we have no budget episodes. So let's build a small room that is a shuttlecraft and turn on the dry ice machine and in front of a rock face and shoot a whole episode there.
It's a bit like Shuttlepod 1 from Enterprise.
Well, actually it is. And in fact, I've always kind of felt like Shuttlepod 1 was a bit of an homage to the Galileo 7,
great.
Even though it's just Trip and Reed there trapped in the shuttlecraft. But it is this kind of, they're stuck in a shuttlecraft.
Wow.
And you know, the Galileo 7, it crashes on this planet and they can't get off the planet. So they have to find a way. Scotty has to figure out how to repair the ship. And they have a big debate, which for me, when I watch it, it always reminds me a little bit of Monty Python, because there's this debate where they have to figure out how to reduce the weight of the shuttlecraft enough that they can take off again. And, you know, it's kind of like, who should we eat? kind of thing going on like that.
Oh,
it's like a cannibal sketch from Monty Python or something. And of course, Spock, with his Vulcan logic and lack of emotion, is very insensitive to the issue of who weighs more,
right?
You know, who needs to be left behind,
right.
And then there's this additional element of these like gigantic creatures with these really, really, really huge spears that start killing crew members, so that's the story.
Okay.
That's the Galileo.
Well, that could turn into an interesting comic. Obviously, we're gonna have to wait till the first one comes out. I'm gonna have to find a good comic shop in Seattle. That's another thing. If anyone has suggestions for comic shops in Seattle, hit me up on Twitter. But so I need to pick up this one and see how they're approaching the original series with the new cast. And especially I need to check out the Legion of Superheroes crossover, because I know we talked about it a couple weeks ago. I still don't get it. So they also previewed the second book, but they didn't say much more than it's going to be a continuation of this story.
Yeah.
That'll be quite interesting.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that one. I mean, I have no problem with it. It's fine. I think it's for a specific audience. I'm not sure that general Star Trek fandom is going to be all that into the crossover between the Legion of Superheroes and the Star Trek crew. It's kind of like they had the zombie series, Infestation series, earlier this year. But, you know, I mean, if I get my hands on it, I'll take a look at it and see.
Yeah, definitely.
You never know. It could turn out to be interesting.
Yeah. And then a third thing that I definitely think is going to be great for Star Trek fans is the 100-page spectacular, which IDW says is a quartet of stories, which is as sort of an introduction to the IDW Star Trek I don't know even what to say. But
Universe.
Yeah. There we go.
So, question here, though. I mean, the first thing that popped in my head here was that does it have to be 100 pages to be classified as a spectacular? Like, if it were 90 pages, would it qualify as a spectacular, or would it just be kind of like a omnibus, or I don't know, some... Would we need to change our terminology here?
It's possible. You know, maybe 50 is only like a parade. 100 is a spectacular.
Maybe that's it. All right. So this is like a... So what does it say? The first three are kind of standalone stories, mm-hmm. and the fourth is the Spock Reflections story.
Right. And they said that one's going to be the first of a larger story, a continuing series. I don't know if you can get it. It doesn't sound like you can get that one standalone. You have to actually buy this whole spectacular for it. So I like these sort of combined stories. They sort of take some of the best of what they've done and present it and say, you know, if you're new to Star Trek on comics, read this and you'll get an idea of it. So that's going to be really great to me, since I have not read any of IDW Star Trek up till now. I'm definitely going to pick this up to sort of get an idea of how they do things and see if it's something I'm interested in reading from week to week.
Except they did the Countdown series leading up to the JJ movie.
Oh, was that IDW? Okay.
That was IDW too, I believe. Okay. So you've read that one.
Right. So I've not read any of their like classic Star Trek.
Yeah.
At least.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to these, and hopefully before too much longer, I'm finally going to get that iPad. And when I get the iPad, I'm definitely going to be checking out a lot of these comics. I've tried them on my iPhone, but it's just the screen is just too small.
Well, wait till you get your iPad 3
really
HD
get into it.
3DX Pro edition.
Oh, is that the one with the holographic keyboard?
It is.
And the replicator slot, which I'm really looking forward to, because I can replicate my Rectigino in the morning and then I can read IDW comics on my iPad.
Well, I prefer Leola Root tea, but whatever works for you.
Yeah, it's a little too bitter for me. Well, you know, there was another interesting thing that came up just earlier today before we recorded the show. We've talked about on the site and in Hyperchannel at least a little bit about the Klingon Monopoly that's coming up from USAopoly. It's they've done Star Trek Monopolies in the past, and then this one is really focused on the Klingons, and it's coming out November 17th, and looks pretty cool for me. Have you had a chance to look at the board or anything?
Yeah, I've looked over it a little bit, and what I like is that there's so many little details. Like it's in English and Klingon. The little game tokens look really detailed and really cool. It doesn't look like they just stuck some planet names on there and moved on. They really went in and tried to make this be for the fans, something really detailed. You can spend a lot of time.
Yeah.
Since Monopoly games usually take a while, maybe it'll make it a little bit more exciting as you go.
My kids like to play Monopoly with me, but we have to set a timer on it. I remember I used to play Monopoly with my grandmother when I was a kid, and the games would go on for months. I would go visit on the weekend, and we would play for 3 days over the weekend, you know, here and there, and then we would leave the board set up for the following weekend. So can't do that these days. But, you know, speaking of the tokens, we just put a video that USAopoly released a few days ago. We just put it on Trek FM, and it actually shows them creating the Bird of Prey token. It's a time-lapse video. It's 2 minutes long, and the actual creation takes 22 hours and 5 days, and it's really amazing to find detail in the work. So check that out over on our site. But what came up on Twitter, this story's been around, this has been kind of building for a few weeks. What came up on Twitter earlier that was fun is we were thinking that maybe Ferengi Monopoly would be possibly a better route to go than Klingon Monopoly right now. And got into a really interesting discussion that kept growing and growing, and we kept adding new names and new names to it. And I think you have a term for that, don't you?
I call that a Twitter snowball, where you end up with so many at reply names in the thing, you don't actually have any room for your actual message.
Right. At that point, it's just a bunch of names and then C-O-N-T continued at the end of it, dot, dot, dot.
Exactly.
But so we had a few good ideas for Ferengi Monopoly. Mm. Of course, you would need to use Latinum as the money. And one of my favorite features is that when you make your way around the board and you pass Go... Mm. Instead of getting $200 or a slip of Latinum, you actually get umox, which thought was a really racy thing to put into a Star Trek game, but you know, it is the 21st century and could maybe boost sales a little bit. What kind of ideas do you have for Ferengi Monopoly?
Well, obviously you could have Odo's holding cell instead of jail. Every 3 minutes.
That came up. Yeah.
I think, I'm trying to remember which of these I came up with and which were on Twitter. I think every 3 minutes someone has to shout, Dubbo!
Yeah, that's why. I think someone else mentioned the holding cell. And I think you mentioned Dabo, and I know we're going to see these games on The Big Bang Theory.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be Raj's job to yell Dabo every 3 minutes.
Right.
Speaking of which, he'll get an evil look from Sheldon. So.
And I do hope that I can use a Lita game token. That'll be the one I go to every week.
Yeah, I think you're going to reserve that one, right?
I think so.
And I was thinking, you know, if we're going to really tie in Ferengi from everywhere, I'd like to have the Barzon wormhole.
Oh, okay.
Which, of course, is from the Next Generation episode, The Price, where the Ferengi end up in the Delta Quadrant, which gives us that opportunity to tie in to the Next Generation on Voyager.
Right. Well,
they encounter those guys.
And also, I heard they'll be making a special edition, a Last Outpost edition, in which everyone has to wear fur and swing whips at each other and jump around like monkeys while playing the game.
Oh, man. I think there are going to be a limited number of those for sure.
Definitely.
But I'm going to pre-order. If I can get that, I'm going to pre-order because we got to play that at the next Trek FM party.
Definitely.
All right. Well, everyone, watch for Klingon Monopoly coming out November 17th from USAopoly. And watch for Ferengi Monopoly coming soon. We'll reveal details of that as they become available.
All right. So speaking of details becoming available, Zachary Quinto, who of course played Spock in the J.J. Abrams reboot film, was asked some questions about Star Trek. And so the headline on this article was Vulcan might be back. But maybe Chris, you can tell us how that's a little misleading.
Yeah. Well, I of course it caught my eye immediately for a couple of reasons. One being, it was a really bold move to destroy Vulcan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like what kind of, you know, Star Trek universe shattering moment can you think of to kind of reboot the series? It's like, okay, Romulus is destroyed and Vulcan is destroyed. It's two just major events within the universe. And so I was thinking, I saw it and I thought, well, Vulcan might be back. Are they actually thinking about doing this? Because I was hoping not, because I think it would just destroy credibility. I think they're already kind of on thin ice in the credibility department with a lot of Star Trek fandom by destroying Vulcan and the whole premise of rebooting Star Trek. And I was thinking, gosh, if they bring Vulcan back, it's going to be like the biggest big red reset button that's ever been hit in Star Trek. It's like you can't do it.
It was like,
but I don't think that's what he was saying.
No. That was my same worry that, they've got to, if they're going to make a big change like this, they've got to stick with it and really make it happen, or else fans are really going to revolt. But watching the video, I really don't think that's what Quinto was saying at all. He was mainly saying that what they've done is made it so they can go anywhere they want. And I think what he should have focused on is differences from the original series, that things aren't necessarily going to go like, maybe there won't be a war with the Klingons, you know. Maybe, you know, all these things might never happen, or new things might happen. You know, they might run into the Borg. You know, anything could happen because it's this alternate timeline.
I just thought of something really scary, Greg. If they can change anything about the Star Trek universe, what if the Klingons never create Glommers? What would you do?
Oh, no. I don't think...
It's like the worst thing that could ever happen for you. So,
oh dear, I need to start a writing campaign for IDW at least to put Glommers in the reboot comic.
Definitely.
The trouble with Glommers.
But, more Glommers, more trouble. I think what you're saying is correct though, that he was just kind of throwing out possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we could go anywhere, we could do anything because this is new Star Trek.
Exactly.
But I think maybe in that case, he kind of maybe went a little bit too far, just throwing something out there.
Yeah.
that, yeah, they could do anything. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that they're going to stick to their guns and the fact that Vulcan is gone. Now, they could come around where the survivors, the Vulcan survivors, could settle a new planet and start to rebuild the Vulcan culture, Vulcan society. That's perfectly possible. And I think probable that over the course of time in this timeline, you know, you would see that happen. I don't know if we'll see it on the screen necessarily, because you just can't really do that much. Yeah. Even if we have four or five movies, you cannot really progress everything so much. But maybe these comics that we talked about will be a good place to do that.
Yeah, yeah, probably. That'd be really good if we saw that. Hopefully something involving the Romulans more than we've seen. Yeah, these sister races. You know, I'd love to see more with them.
Here's a question, and this is something we could talk about more later in the show when we get into our feature today, which is going to be about the Romulans. But just because we're talking about this right now, Romulus was destroyed, Vulcan was destroyed, despite the bitterness between Nero and Spock and the Vulcans that we saw in the first JJ movie. I wonder if this tragedy suffered by both worlds here could lead towards a unification of the Vulcans and Romulans.
I think it's possible. You know, looking back at the original series episodes that featured the Romulans, you know, first you have Kirk killing this Romulan captain, and then you have Spock sort of leading on this Romulan commander and, you know, making her think that he's in love with him. You know, I think it's Kirk and Spock's fault that there was this whole Vulcan-Romulan Federation war in the first place. So, you know, maybe if all that doesn't happen, I'm kidding here, but it is possible, given the new timeline, that things could turn out differently. You know, maybe whoever was pushing for war in the late 23rd century can now not have been born, or, you know, something happens before that happens. And I'd love to see the Vulcans actually settle on Romulus as their new homeworld. That probably won't happen, but we'll just have to see.
So you think Kirk and Spock were responsible, and I'm blaming it on Stuart Baird, because I think I'm blaming everything on Stuart Baird right now. You know, apparently he was once again carefully planning things with the earthquake on the U.S. East Coast the other day.
And yeah, Stuart Baird
I blamed him last week for our earthquake in March.
He caused the East Coast earthquake, the West Coast earthquake, and then he caused Steve Jobs to retire. So Stuart Baird is just messing everything up for us.
Yeah. He's responsible for the Zune also, isn't he?
Just in general.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about this topic in the feature. We're really going to get into Romulans today and talk more about them. So, but talking about other possible futures for Star Trek and where this show could go, where the series could go, there was another story that came out that we've heard a little bit about in the past, but there's a little more on it now. A possible Star Trek series concept from David Foster at 1947 Entertainment.
Yeah, and so this is a guy who's worked on some of the Star Trek series in the past, like art department, he said. And he apparently has a whole series planned out, like 7 series, even the finale planned out that he'd like to pitch to CBS. It's interesting to see. Obviously, we're so used to having Star Trek on the air constantly that there's this hole, this gap, this void that needs to be filled by somebody to get Star Trek back on TV. What did you think of this guy's pitch? It seemed to be back in the prime timeline, taking place post Voyager.
Yeah, I didn't quite get a feel for all the details that I think I need in order to know what I really think about it. But TrekWeb.com interviewed David Foster at or around Star Trek Las Vegas about this. And Foster, this was a concept that is supposed to take place, like you said, it's back in the prime timeline. And it takes place after Voyager. So it's a post-Voyager era series taking place in, I believe he said, the 26th century. Is that right?
Is that right? That sounds about right. At least after
Voyager.
That's
what I saw. Yeah, I think I saw 26th century, which would put it about 100 years after Voyager, really, because Voyager, TNG DS9 Voyager, is at the end of the 24th century, Star Trek Online is right after that, beginning of the 25th century. Right. So this would push us out about 100 years after what's happening in Star Trek Online right now.
Yeah.
It said it would feature a lot of familiar races, the Klingons, mm-hmm. the Ferengi, the Andorians, the Vulcans, the Trill, which I thought it was interesting that the Trill were thrown in there, because the Trill, basically what we know of the Trill are Jadzia Dax and Ezri Dax and the Dax symbiote itself. A few mentions of the Trill homeworld, I think, being occupied by the Jem'Hadar during the Dominion War. And then there was that Trill appearance on The Next Generation, which I kind of dismiss as being Trill because it was before they even fleshed out what the Trill were at that point. So
I
don't really know a lot about the Trill.
The part of the problem that comes when someone who's mostly a fan is pitching a new show, I think they focus a little too much on grabbing like the elements they like of the old show and putting it into a new show. What I really liked about like Next Gen really tried to get away from a lot of the stuff from the original series, and Deep Space Nine tried to get really away from Next Gen. I'd love to see a new series. I mean, you can't ignore the Ferengi and the Romulans and the Klingons, but they can be less important, and you can come up with new alien races that really set your new show apart.
Yeah. I'm wondering if someone did a Star Trek series that was... The problem is I kind of feel like this has already been done with Enterprise. I feel like the original premise of Enterprise was to create a much more contemporary drama show that was Star Trek but wasn't.
Right.
And then they... But the fans wanted something that was really a lead up to the original series, and they wanted to see Tellarites and Andorians and Orions and all this stuff. What we got in the fourth series of Enterprise, which was really great. I'm wondering if someone created a Star Trek series that was really a drama series that was, it was Star Trek, but it kind of really, really got away from what we know as Star Trek. If it would be able to connect with a whole new audience of people who just completely aren't Trekkies at all right now. I kind of picture, you know, shows like CSI or what if they did like the Department of Temporal Investigations and they made it more like a CSI type show, except it was about time. And and it was really just barely using Star Trek as its premise. I wonder if that would be successful or not.
Yeah, I don't know if it'd be successful. It'd definitely be something I'd like to see. You know, that's the sort of thing that I feel like isn't being done so much. And especially with, like we say, Enterprise tried and then got back more to... When you really watch it, Enterprise does feel a lot like Voyager, the way it's shot, the way it's structured. I'd love to see them trying different show concepts, not just a new captain and a new ship.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting. So sometimes I think I wish that I could see a Star Trek series that was like that looked more like the new Battlestar Galactica, but it was Star Trek. It has like that real life feeling to it. It'd be interesting. I would love to see this Department of Temporal Investigations, which is a new novel series that's out, and which picks up from the from Trials and Tribulations, the agents who come in to question Sisko on what happened with them going back to time. They are the main characters in that new series.
Right, sort of
really cool.
Trying to remember their names, but they're anagrams, I think, of Scully and Mulder from The X-Files.
Ah, yeah.
So a cute little shout out there.
A lot of clever stuff in there. So I don't know about this particular series. He says that Foster says that it hasn't been pitched to CBS. They might pitch it. They might not pitch it. Don't know yet. I still think that, as we've talked about before, that we won't get a new Star Trek live action series until the J.J. Abrams movies are over.
Yeah.
And if we do get a new series while that's going on, it'll be set in the J.J. Abrams timeline, I think.
Yeah, I think we're much more likely to get an animated show with probably impersonators doing or sound-alikes playing most of the characters.
Impersonators. I'm Kirk, but I'm not.
Exactly. No. Well, so it would be about the Enterprise crew, but it wouldn't be like they do with Star Wars, the Clone Wars. It wouldn't be the actual actors coming in every week to record, which was one thing I really liked about the animated series. But I doubt you could get Chris Pine to come in like they got William Shatner to come in.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be able to do that. Well, it'll be interesting to see what we get and when we get it.
Yeah.
You know, I see a lot of energy on Twitter these days of people wanting, you're just tweeting out, please give us a new Star Trek series. And I think that Star Trek fans, when we have Star Trek series every week, year after year after year, kind of take it for granted. And it's not until we don't have it. I think, you know, fans didn't support Enterprise very well. And even Voyager support was waning, and then Enterprise wasn't well supported. And finally, the studio said, stop, we're not going to do it anymore. It's canceled. And then, almost immediately, but very soon after, fans were like, oh, we need a Star Trek series on TV again. And I just think it's something for us to note as fans that, you know, we really have to support the franchise we love, and or it can go away.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, someone who does a really good job of keeping fan support of Star Trek alive online is StarTrek.com. And both through their website, through Twitter, and especially through their Facebook page, StarTrek.com has a very, very active Facebook presence. And they're doing polls just on a really an ongoing basis. It seems like there's a new poll every couple of days. And did you see the one recently they had where they asked about each Star Trek crew and who faced the toughest foes, toughest villains?
I thought that was interesting and something to really to think back to all the different series and what their different villains were. And I believe the crew that won out in a way is Voyager. The people said they faced the toughest villains, which part of that may come from the fact that Voyager was cut off from the rest of Starfleet. You know, there was no way that a bigger ship or a fleet could come in and help them when they go up against the Borg. But you know, when you think about something like Deep Space Nine, where the Federation almost got defeated by the Founders, I have a hard time saying that Voyager had it that rough.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really a tough call to make. You know, if I think about Voyager, so Voyager, they started out facing off against the Kazon, who I never liked, and I've always said that the Kazon are a poor man's Klingons. They look like Klingons. They try to kind of act like Klingons. I thought it was a complete lack of imagination on the part of the writers and producers when Voyager started by having the setting up the Kazon as like Voyager's big foe. But as the series went on, they did come up with some pretty powerful villains. Of course, Voyager faced off against the Borg, which a lot of fans probably view as the most powerful villain in Star Trek, although I'm not sure that I agree on that. And Voyager really did a lot to kind of declaw the Borg and turn them into wimps. But Voyager also faced off against Species 8472, which was an incredibly powerful villain that the writers completely missed an opportunity by not fleshing them out and making them more part of the show. But that's a really powerful enemy. They also...
there was the Hunter race. I forget what they were called.
That's what I was about to say. Those are the Hirogen. And the Hirogen were some pretty serious, shall we say, badass enemies.
Yes, I think so.
That Voyager had to face off against. And Voyager... There were a lot of villains that Voyager faced off against that we only really got to see for a very short time period, and that we didn't see them anymore. So if you roll it all up, I might agree that Voyager, on an ongoing basis, that crew had the toughest time over the course of their voyage against foes. But
That's probably true. I mean, you think about something like we talked about the Year of Hell episode. And you know, even if it was erased from the timeline, it's still something that happened to them. And then, you know, especially if you look at TNG or the original series, they never were in that big a danger, at least during the actual show. Maybe the Borg for the next gen cast. I just rewatched, I always forget what it's called, but the Bynar episode, 110001.
110001.
1110. So the Bynars are such a weak villain, but somehow they steal the Enterprise.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I put them in the villain category, but yeah, they were... no one even took them. That's how they... Well, they stole the Enterprise because no one took them seriously.
Exactly,
no one thought they could be a threat. So
right. So that's the sort of thing that I feel like Next Gen faced. You know, they come up against the Romulans or the Borg, but in Next Gen, they always had the backup of the rest of the Federation.
The Next Generation was, you know, it's mostly like a peacetime show.
Yeah.
Really, within Star Trek. And they had it easy most of the time. The Borg were obviously a very formidable foe, and especially during that time period where the Federation was kind of just meeting the Borg and hadn't learned how to deal with them yet. And the Klingons and the Romulans, and these were very traditional foes that the Next Generation crew had to face off against. And they faced off against them very much in a political, you know, like a U.S. versus Soviet Union, U.S. versus China kind of very structured political situation where Voyager was really just getting hammered all the time by these unknowns. DS9, you know, I would say that the Dominion may be the most formidable villain ever on Star Trek because the Jem'Hadar themselves are really difficult to deal with, and they were just the foot soldiers. It was the Changelings were the real threat, and the way that they could infiltrate Starfleet headquarters was very, very difficult. And the fact that the Federation and the Klingons and the Romulans all had to basically come together and join forces is this kind of like allies power to defeat the Dominion in the Dominion War. Probably the biggest real threat. But yeah, I think with the poll results here, I can definitely see where the voters are coming from in naming Voyager as having had the toughest time with villains.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm mainly thinking that, like, if I tune into a fifth season Voyager episode, or I tune into a fifth season DS9 episode, there's so much more. People are worn down on DS9, and people are like sick of all of that they're having to deal with. Whereas in Voyager, they're always joking around. They're always able to go off to the holodeck and to still have a good time. I feel like things really happened to the people of DS9. Whereas sometimes, like in the middle of an episode, you feel like Voyager might be getting into trouble, but they always got out of it pretty easily.
Yeah. Well, it was because, as we talked about a while back, the difference between the serialized nature of Deep Space Nine and this just episodic nature of Voyager is you didn't want to do too much to the Voyager crew because you have to be able to hit that reset button at the end of every episode and have everybody back for the following week. DS9, what they went through, what the Federation in general went through, which was played out on the Deep Space Nine series, was the most intense and the most serious of the trials that were faced by a crew for sure.
Yeah, definitely
agree with you there. So one more thing before we wrap up the news segment today, speaking of polls, we of course run a poll on Trek FM every week. And our most recent poll was to find out which Enterprise design is the favorite of fans. There's so many of them now, starting from the 1701, going down through the A, B, C, D, E, F, and then there's the JJ, and then there's the NX-01. And we got some pretty interesting results, and I think what we basically found that there are two or three designs that are the fan favorites, and the rest of all the designs are just kind of back there at the back of the pack.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it on one level, people really love the original series crew design, the 1701, and then the refit and the A, I think together got the huge majority of responses. And then after that is probably the Next Gen crew. If you put together the D and the E, they're the next highest. And then the next highest, which actually is the highest single response, was the NX-01 from Enterprise, which I'm actually surprised by this one because most of the fans, if I talk to them, they might like Enterprise, but they don't like the ship. They say it doesn't look very Star Trek-y.
Well, it doesn't. I mean, and that's kind of the point. That was what they were going after when they designed it. So, the NX-01 from Enterprise, the original Enterprise ship, did win the poll with 21%. It got the highest percentage of votes. And it was just barely beat out the 1701 from the original series, the classic Enterprise that got 19% of the vote. And then the 1701 refit and the A, if we combine those two together, because they're really the same ship, we listed them that way because they are different ships, but they are the same design. And that design got 22% of the vote.
Yeah.
If we add them together. The refit got 18% and the A got 4%. So I think that shows you how... I think it's because the A... The appearance of the A was first in Star Trek V, which is a movie that most Star Trek fans, when it's mentioned to them, they do a couple of shots of tequila and try to forget that it existed, which may be the reason for that. But that ship design actually was the favorite. The D and the E, completely different ship designs. Yeah. The D got 16% and the E got 13%. So a lot of love for the Next Generation crew there as well. Just a quick rundown of the other results. Like I said, the 1701A got 4%. The B, which appeared in Generations, got 1%. The C, which appeared in Yesterday's Enterprise, got 1%. And the F, which has only been in existence for a month or so now, as part of a Star Trek Online contest, got 3%. So it beat out the B and the C combined. And the J.J. Abrams Enterprise design got 4% of the vote.
Yeah.
So how about you, Greg? What is your favorite here?
I think I ended up voting for the D just because it's a huge ship. It's a beautiful ship, especially... in Generations, when they're doing it with computer graphics and there's that beautiful lighting on it. We talked about the lighting in Generations being really good. I think it just looks really good out there. But it was tough between that one and the refit design because I really like that design as well.
Yeah, it is really hard to choose here. You know, when push comes to shove, I think I have to go with the refit. That's probably my favorite design. I have so much nostalgia for... the original series movies, especially when I think of Star Trek, that ship is probably the Enterprise that comes to mind first for me. I love the original 1701 as well. I like the D. The D's a cool ship. I think I kind of like the E a little bit better in the next gen stuff. And I like the NX-01. I just I agree with people who say that it doesn't look like Star Trek, but I think that's the point.
I admire
the work of the designers who designed the NX-01 because the task of trying to make that ship look retro when the 1701 original 1701 looks so retro to us now, anyway, was just a huge design challenge. And I think they did an amazing job creating a ship that looks real to me. Like I feel like I could go out and actually see that ship having been built by humans and walk on it. So
yeah, I think so, that one and the E feel the most like real starships to me.
They're
very
feel,
detailed.
Yeah. The E does feel real like that. Yeah, I agree. So that was the results of our ships poll. And now the current poll that we're running, which you may be able to get the tail end of the poll by the time you hear this. We usually let it run until right into the first part of the week. Is a great poll, Greg. Why don't you tell everyone what the new poll is?
Yeah, so the name of this poll is, which villain's name would you most like to shout during battle? And I think the one
we're getting some great responses on this one, too. We've had a few. One name that we had like 30 things that we were going to list. We can't put them all on here. So why don't we put like 7 or 8 and let's put an other field and let people kind of fill things in. We've gotten a number of votes now for Harry Mudd.
Oh, nice.
What would you shout, Greg?
Well, the first thing I was going to say was Horda. But Horda wasn't actually that much of a villain, I suppose, in the episode.
Yeah. Not too much. one thing that we had to put on there, we just couldn't resist, we had to put lens flare on there.
Yes. So
if you've recently watched the JJ movie, you can go and actually vote for lens flare.
Yes.
You can also vote for Well Pro.
Yes.
And I think Empress Hoshi is on there as well.
That was, I voted for Empress Hoshi. I don't want to skew the votes too much by mentioning during the podcast, but she is quite a formidable villain, especially since she has the advanced Defiant technology.
Yeah, that's true. I'm thinking about voting for her as well. I'm also going to probably vote and write in Baird, because as I said earlier, he is quite a villain.
Yes.
So everyone, anyway, we'll be reminding you of it on Twitter, but go over to trek.fm/polls and let us know which villain's name you want to shout during battle. When The Next Generation premiered, they tried to get away from a lot of the conventions of the original series, and whereas the Klingons had been portrayed as the big villain, and the Romulans rarely seen, the Romulans quickly became an important part of The Next Generation. So Greg, today let's talk about the Romulans a little bit, and their first appearance in Star Trek, and kind of how they've changed over the course of five live-action series. They even appeared in the animated series, and of course they were in the last TNG movie.
Yeah, it was an interesting trip down memory lane for me this week. I watched, I guess, five episodes total, Balance of Terror and The Enterprise Incident from TOS, and then Unification Parts 1 and 2 for TNG, and then In the Pale Moonlight, which we've talked about in the past as being possibly the best episode of DS9, and then possibly the best episode of Trek in general. So it was definitely interesting to see the different way they were portrayed, especially between the original series and TNG. Quite a few differences when they sort of rethought them as villains.
Yeah, like so many of the races that we saw, villain or not, in the original series, the Romulans were not really fleshed out very much in the original series. You know, not a lot of stuff was really fleshed out in the original series. And we saw the Romulans only in three episodes in the original series. We saw them, of course, in Balance of Terror, the most famous, with Mark Leonard playing the commander. Mm-hmm. They appeared again in The Deadly Years, where they attacked the Enterprise, but no real character development there. And then,
right,
of course, we got the Enterprise incident, which you just mentioned in the third season, where we finally, I guess, really got to spend a little bit more time with the Romulans than we did in Balance of Terror.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting in Enterprise incident that we got a little bit more fleshed out. The similarities between Romulans and Vulcans. I don't remember The Deadly Years too well, but in Balance of Terror, they sort of note that Romulans look a lot like Vulcans, and you have the one character who is, you know, a bigot, from what Kirk was saying. And
yeah, the thinking, bridge officer.
He might be a Romulan spy.
Yeah. My grandfather fought in the Romulan War.
Right.
You cannot trust a Romulan. Yeah,
or just sort of like the character,
exactly.
the character from the new Star Trek movie, who had his family fought in the Romulan War and was just, you know, ready to get out there and kick some Romulan ass.
Yeah,
this guy was too, but he was even extending that prejudice not just to Romulans, but saying, well, Spock could be a Romulan spy in our midst. You know, how can we trust him? But it was like quickly downplayed in a very.
Yeah.
I don't know, in a very TNG way of just saying, you know, Spock's not a Romulan. We're not even going to talk about this. It's not a thing.
Well, I thought it was kind of in a TOS way too. I mean, you know, one of the things I love about Star Trek is the social commentary and this kind of, you know, speaking about ourselves. And one thing, I think TOS is the series where that is the most evident of all the series. It's very transparent in a lot of TOS stories. And And I think that was kind of a point that they wanted to make in that episode. And of course, it was a knee-jerk reaction on the part of that officer that they didn't know what the Romulans looked like. And then suddenly when he sees one and realizes that it looks like Spock, he just kind of goes off on, Spock must be a spy.
I'm still trying to figure out how they saw inside the Romulan bridge.
I think, they used those same special sensors that they used in the cage that are... the menagerie that are able to get all those like really, really cool camera angles, even though you're nowhere near the
It's the same one ship. That the was it the Metrons used in Arena.
Yeah.
And then the same one that they had during Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah.
They could show Riker the previously on of Q.
You know, it's a little known fact that the World Wrestling Federation got their technology for the way they shoot the matches from the Metrons, from when the Metrons shot that fight between Kirk and the Gorn.
Thankfully, they didn't get too many
Star
of their wrestling
right
moves.
Yeah.
From the Gorn.
They were trained by the Gorn. Swing! anyway, so the Romulans... that's what we got in the original series. And yeah, it wasn't very fleshed out, but still some very, I mean, Balance of Terror, one of the classic Star Trek episodes of all time, really, that kind of submarine battle between Kirk and Mark Leonard's Romulan commander. And it's another interesting thing for me with the Romulans in the original series and kind of the way it's played out over all of Star Trek that we saw the Romulans first in the original series before we saw the Klingons. We didn't see Klingons until Errand of Mercy, which was later in season one, but yet the Klingons became the villain of that series. And really all through Star Trek, of course, in the Next Generation, the Klingons are kind of allies with the Federation, but it's always an uneasy alliance, and they're still villains, you know, all the way through Star Trek. But the Romulans were kind of, they were introduced and then just really not used much until the Next Generation.
Yeah. Well, so then, let's see. Speaking of, we talked about how they're used in Balance of Terror, and then in the Enterprise Incident, we get them a little bit fleshed out more. Obviously, as you say, still not to very, very much extent. We get three ships this time instead of just the one. And we learn that they have... We knew they had cloaking technology. This is some new form of cloaking technology.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I was watching the Enterprise Incident yesterday, I think it was, and they kind of seem surprised by the cloak, and they make comments about, you know, the Romulans have developed this cloaking technology. But I think it's one of those things in Star Trek where you kind of have to fill in the blanks and be a little bit flexible, because if humans and Romulans fought this war against each other, I think the Romulans had cloaking technology. And I'm a little vague here on this one. In the Enterprise episode Minefield, which is the kind of the first time that humans and Romulans made contact. They didn't see the Romulans, of course, but kind of the backstory of the Romulans is that the Romulans knew of the existence of humans for a long time before humans knew of the existence of Romulans. And then in the Enterprise episode Minefield, the Enterprise NX-01, they come across this minefield. Wow, I wonder where that title came from. They happen to be from the Romulans. And I haven't watched that episode in a long time. Do you recall if we ever see a Romulan ship cloaking or decloaking in that episode?
That episode features a prototype cloaking device.
Okay,
And it didn't work very well. I think it... I'm going to get corrected here, but I believe it was not functioning very well. And so the idea was... The Romulans didn't use cloaking technology still for a while because it was not working very well.
Yeah, because one of the characters gets partially cloaked or something. Is that right? In Minefield? Reed or somebody?
Yeah. Something like that.
I don't remember. I haven't seen that episode in a while. But at any rate, so there was a cloaking element in Minefield. Now, of course, this is the 2020 vision with which we look back at Star Trek now that the whole story has been written there, which obviously when they wrote the Enterprise Incident, you know, none of this existed. But the fact that the Romulans and the humans had fought a war 100 years in the past means that I would think cloaking technology existed. So the humans would kind of have to know that the Romulans had cloaks. So I don't know.
So maybe
kind of hard to tell as you look back, you know, through all the series. But
I think part of the idea might have been a sort of Cold War analogy in that perhaps by this point they had they knew enough about the cloaking technology to be able to detect them. With the level of cloaking technology they knew they had, they could detect them. And then this new one you couldn't detect. And this maybe is why Kirk was sent on this mission to get the cloaking device, because we need to know more. Because I really like the way that the Romulans are set up this way, as they fought this war and neither side really won. And now there's this neutral zone and there are these treaties. They're very much set up as not a mirror for the Federation, but a force that is as powerful as the Federation, that isn't an antagonist, just wants to have their territory and be there, and they don't want anyone coming in and messing with them.
Yeah.
Well, whereas the Klingons are always like trying to do stuff and always trying to get into battles.
Yeah. Yeah. The Klingons are very aggressive. The Romulans are, it's a bit like, you know, the US, like you said, a Cold War analogy. It's a bit like the US and the Soviet Union, in that we have a formidable opponent who is probably technologically on par. There's been a conflict in the past, but we don't know a lot about what's going on inside. And that's even portrayed through the Next Generation as well. It's portrayed that we don't really know much about the internal makeup of the Romulan Empire. We don't know much about their culture. It's kind of like that Iron Curtain thing where, you know, the Soviets, we didn't know, except what we could gather from espionage, we didn't really know the facts about a lot of what was going on inside. There was a lot of disinformation put out by the Soviets as well. So it is kind of a lot of that kind of analogy, which was appropriate for the time that TOS was made.
Yeah.
I wish it had maybe been fleshed out more in TOS. Yeah. And that's why I was kind of surprised, you know, when you stop and you realize that we saw the Romulans before we saw the Klingons, but yet the Klingons were used more often, although even the Klingons did not appear in TOS as often as you think they did. You know, it feels like they were there more than they were, but that Cold War analogy would have been a nice thing to play out. But then they did kind of pick it up on TNG, which was still at the tail end of the Cold War.
Right. So if we want to talk a little bit about TNG, let's see. I want to talk a little bit about how they changed between TOS and TNG. One way is obviously the ships they were using. There's a huge difference there. In Enterprise Incident, they're using Klingon technology or Klingon ships.
Well, that's when Spock says, intelligence reports the prop department is now using Klingon technology for Romulan ships.
So. Yeah. Well, and actually, in the remastered version, one of those ships is now one of your regular Romulan birds of prey.
Oh, is it? Okay. I haven't seen the remastered of Enterprise Incident, but it's good to know, because, I mean, obviously it was done for budgetary reasons, especially the third season. I mean, Star Trek was just barely holding on for dear life in terms of budget. So I overlook it. I just kind of pretend like they're not Klingon ships or whatever, but it did create a confusing element in Star Trek fandom now for decades, where people have to try to justify why. Well, there was a technological exchange between the Klingons and the Romulans, but now the Klingons and the Romulans hate each other more than anything in the world. And
Exactly.
But anyway, moving back to TNG, like you said.
So then for TNG, they've given them a whole new ship design.
Yeah, and formidable one as well.
Yeah, I love the Romulan bird of prey from TNG with this.
It's actually called
big oval wings. Oh, what is it called?
It's actually called a warbird in TNG.
Oh, yes.
But it's easy to think of it as a bird of prey because of the Enterprise incident, and they're using these birds of prey and the old the Romulan bird of prey, you know, from Balance of Terror as well. But they call them warbirds in TNG, which they're just enormous ships.
Sometimes they've shown it next to the Enterprise D.
Yeah,
And it's like really big there. And it sort of has a, the front looks like a beak.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool design.
Yeah.
Very cool design. I think one reason they redesigned those was to make a ship that was very large, that was comparable to the Enterprise D, to show this like a, that the power balance was there between the Romulans and the Federation.
Right. I think if either side had become more powerful, they would have just invaded and taken over. But what they were trying to show is that the each side was sort of stealing from each other. Yeah. Things like in the Enterprise incident must have been going on over and over and over again. And they were just learning what each other were doing and advancing the technology. I feel like Klingons kind of fell behind technologically in a way the Romulans really didn't.
Yeah, kind of, because later on, especially like when we see the Klingons in a future timeline, like in All Good Things, you kind of see that the Klingons are advancing a little bit technologically in terms of their ship design. Or in yesterday's Enterprise, when we're in the alternate timeline where this war has been going on, you can see that the Klingons were like escalating their technology. But otherwise, you know, they did kind of tend to continue using these old birds of prey from the original series movies.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way into Generations, they're using that stuff. So definitely the Klingons seem to be kind of complacent technologically.
That battle is so ridiculous because the D has no shields whatsoever.
Yeah, I know.
And the bird of prey can't do a single thing about
it. Yeah, right. So in The Next Generation, though, with Romulans, I felt like we delved more into this analogy of two political entities at odds with each other, because whereas the Klingons had this very kind of ancient Japanese warrior-like society to them, the Klingons were given like a very, very bureaucratic, structured society that even though we didn't see a lot in there, we did see that, you know, different levels within the government were extremely important. You had secret police organizations like the Tal Shiar. You had, I guess they just, for me, really always felt very, very bureaucratic.
Yes. Yeah, I'd say that's a big part of it. And it's interesting to see, to look at the differences between the Vulcan and Romulan societies. They started out, we don't know when, but they started out as the same race. And then at some point had this split, and one side went obviously for the more logical side, and one side went for the more devious side. But they both seem to have gotten away from these animalistic urges that they talk about.
Yeah.
You see, when Vulcans sort of go back to how they were, or they lose their ability, like during Ponfar or during some other thing that happens, they go back to their original nature. They don't act like Romulans. They just act like animals, maybe Klingons. The Romulans have this strange, really dangerous, devious manner to
them. Yeah, devious.
As we see Spock not completely outfoxed, but rather outfoxed by these Romulans during his attempt to unify the Romulan and Vulcan cultures.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of the Vulcans have a certain, it's probably because of their insistence on logic and their insistence on suppressing emotion. They have this naivety to them that they are very, I think, too willing to take things at surface value. And Spock, as the movie Spock anyway, is less so like that, because as he becomes more and more in touch with his human half, he begins to think a little bit less like a Vulcan. He's not like T'Pol. You know, T'Pol is very Vulcan.
Right.
Tuvok is very Vulcan, whereas Spock is able to assess things in a little bit more of a thoughtful way instead of just logic kind of thing. The Romulans split off from the Vulcans around the time of Awakening, when Sarek was instituting these reforms, you know, to try to suppress emotion and focus on logic and all. So they broke away right around that time. So they they kept the original Vulcan psychological makeup, I guess I would say.
Right.
While the Vulcans went down this path of Surik with the logic. But like you said, whatever may have been animalistic, I guess there are better parallels for humans. Whereas humans, Vulcans have this shared culture in terms of war and conflict. And humans kind of held onto it more, even though in the 24th century, humans have gotten it under control a bit. Mm-hmm. I think the humans, even of the 24th century, still have this kind of violent nature. Yeah. In them a bit, whereas the Vulcans are able to suppress it.
Yeah, I think if you, they talk so much about the Ferengi being like how we are today. I'd say the Ferengi are sort of the business people, the capitalists of today, whereas the Romulans are like the government people, the people in the bureaucracy.
Yeah, that's a really good way of saying it. Yeah, I think so. So I think that that sets up sort of the political intrigue between the Federation and the Romulans, right, which we get through TNG, and we get a lot in DS9, in the latter part of DS9, where the Romulans right. have to be pulled in. Because the Romulans, during the Dominion War, the Romulans, I think, are, for the most part, content to just sit back and watch the Federation be destroyed, and watch the Klingons be destroyed, and they think that they think that the Dominion is not going to impact them, I think.
Right.
They're thinking more like the Dominion is going to come in and take over the Alpha Quadrant. And, you know, the Romulan Empire is in the Beta Quadrant, as is the Klingon Empire. But I think,
right.
at first, I think the Romulans kind of feel like their greatest enemies are being conquered and that somehow it's going to be a glorious future for them. It's just kind of my feeling of what they may have been
right.
thinking. And then when they realize that the Dominion is not going to stop with the Federation.
Right.
That the Dominion basically conquers anything, like the Borg. The Borg conquers anything,
right.
but the Borg assimilates technologically, whereas the Dominion assimilates culturally and
right.
kind of like with an iron fist ruling everything they conquer. And the Romulans kind of realize that maybe this isn't going to be the best thing for us. But even then, they're kind of not ready yet.
Yeah, it's an interesting analogy to World War II, where you had the Nazis sort of taking over Europe, and it was a while before people really started getting involved, especially the Soviet Union. I think this is probably a direct parallel. The Soviet Union signed a non-aggression treaty with Germany and basically said, you know, you stay on that side and do whatever you want as long as you're on that side of our border.
Yeah.
And they thought everything was just going to be fine and peachy. And, you know, you have, I'm sure FDR was doing everything he could to tell the Russians, you've got to get into the war because, you know, the moment they finish with Europe, they're going to come after you too. And I think what actually got them into the war was not the sort of thing Sisko did, but the Germans actually did invade eventually.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what finally brought them into the
yeah.
war. But you have this sense of, you know what, this isn't my war. I don't have to be involved. It doesn't matter if someone like this is taking over because I'm doing fine where I am.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And so at this point with the Romulans, although we never saw a lot of their culture internally on The Next Generation, the most being during unification, where we actually mm-hmm. have some story taking place on Romulus. We don't see into their culture the way we see into the Klingon culture or the Cardassian culture on DS9,
mm-hmm.
or more about the even the Andorians or the Vulcans on Enterprise. We don't really get that deep into the Romulans, but we do have a pretty good setup that we feel like we know the Romulans. I think by the mm-hmm. time that rolls around in DS9 in the Dominion War,
right,
where they have
right.
to make that decision, and we are pretty comfortable with the idea that they are this calculating society. They are this militaristic but very calculating society.
Right.
And again, it's kind of like the Cold War. It's kind of like with the face-off between the U.S. and Soviet Union, as opposed to something like the U.S. and North Korea or mm-hmm. some of these kind of rogue states that we have today. It's like we always knew that the Soviet Union was not dumb, and the Soviet Union was a large bureaucratic entity that was very calculating, and they weren't going
yeah.
to do something just, you know, they weren't just going to haul off and do something without thinking about it. And that's how we feel about the Romulans here. And so in order to kind of pull them into the war, Sisko has to do something kind of unprecedented within Starfleet from what we had seen before, mm-hmm. even more so than Kirk pretending to be a Romulan to right. steal a cloaking device.
Right. It's an interesting line that he played, that I think the reason we never saw a Federation Romulan war, like an all-out war, was we were thinking, you know, if we went to war with the Soviet Union, it would just be horrible. You know, everyone would die. And I think the same thing would have happened with the Romulans. So we never wanted to anger the Romulans. And so Sisko's, you know, trying to bring the Romulans into the war by lying to them, because apparently, you know, telling them the truth isn't getting them there. But it's so stressful, even for me as I'm watching the episode, because I know if they do this badly, the Romulans are just going to say, you know what, we're just going to go ahead and have that war with you that we've been putting off yeah. for so long.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
They could be allies, but so easily they could be turned into enemies.
Yeah, and that's something that Sisko realizes as well, because I think Sisko is very uneasy about doing this, but feels like he has no choice. It's like it's the last straw. You know, the war against the Dominion is going badly, and the Federation could have to surrender. They have to get some help. But it's a huge gamble, because like you said, if it's done poorly, the Romulans could turn on the Federation as well. And when the Federation is already on the verge of surrendering in the Dominion War, there's no way they can fight off the Romulans at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think, and I think the Dominion, we talk about the Romulans being cold and calculating and very intelligent. The Dominion was the same way. They
even
knew
more
that
so.
They had, yeah, they had to stay away from the Romulans. They had to focus on just the Alpha Quadrant and take care of this first.
Yeah.
Of course, all along, they were planning on going after the Romulans, which is why I think Sisko doesn't, you know, he can't feel bad about making the Dominion look bad, because
right.
obviously the Dominion is bad, and of course they will be attacking the Romulans, but they were treading that fine line too of getting close to the Romulans, but still saying, no, we're friends. Wei-Yun was very good about that, of telling you everything you wanted to hear.
Yeah, that's true. He was very good. Yeah, that's true. It's Sisko could be seen as pulling an unwitting party into a war, but at the same time, they were going to have to fight the Dominion sooner mm-hmm. or later. It wasn't really a choice the Romulans had, and in a way, making them realize it at that point in time could be better for them than later, because later right. on they could be without the Federation, without the Klingons to help,
right.
just on their right. own against the Dominion. So, well, at any rate, that story gave us even more of a look into the Romulan mindset, especially, mm-hmm. and into how the Romulan military worked, how the government worked. And then if we move forward from that on the timeline, so, you know, we could jump back to Enterprise. A little bit was said about the Romulans there. But why don't we jump ahead in the actual timeline to... Not much happened in Voyager with Romulans. You know, we saw Romulan yeah. appear like an Eye of the Needle or so forth. But if we move on to the movies and we get to Nemesis, which we talked about right. last week, and that was the really big Romulan story, and we find out all kinds of new things about the Romulans that we didn't really know in the past.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy all the stuff we learned, where they had this Reman sort of slave race. I was talking to some people on Twitter about where exactly the Remans come from. And I think what we settled on is when the Romulans left the Vulcan culture, they settled in this star system, and the Remans were either living on Remus or living on Romulus and were put on Remus. But either way, they were sort of invaded and then taken over and made to be a slave race.
Yeah, I think so. The when the Romulans left Vulcan, when they split with the Vulcans, they settled a bunch of different planets. I think it was four or five different planets that have been mentioned over the course of Star Trek.
Okay.
in addition to Romulus and Remus. So that's like four or five planets plus Romulus and Remus, and, you know, scattered around places. But they did settle on Romulus and Remus. And I do think it hasn't been explained that the Remans that we see as Remans now probably were indigenous to one of those planets anyway. Yeah.
Right. So obviously this has been done before by invading forces. But what's interesting is that the Federation kind of knew about this, but it wasn't really talked about. And the idea was there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
But it kind of made me think really, like, I sort of thought of the Romulans as being bad guys, sure, but they're off there having their own society. How much bad could be happening? But to learn that they've got this whole race of slaves really turns them into even greater villains.
Yeah. And living.
And so it kind of made me.
Yeah. And a race of slaves that's actually living on one of the two planets of the home system as well. Not off in some other star system, you know, 100 light years away where they've enslaved some other planet, but it's actually there in their binary home system. Yeah.
Right there. And so, you know, when Shinzon was telling Picard how he was fighting for Riemann independence, that actually kind of hits home for us. I mean, you and I come from nations which have done this sort of imperialism in the past, but still, the idea of a conquered nation revolting and taking over is a theme that's been in our literature and our movies for years and years. So I kind of had this weird feeling of liking the Riemanns, even though we have yet to see them do actually anything too good. But it was interesting to see that other side to the Romulan society.
Yeah, yeah, it was a new dimension that we hadn't had before. The Riemanns have been mentioned as having been used as foot soldiers in the Dominion War.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, we haven't really seen much of the Riemanns or what they do. It's just what we've seen in Nemesis. So, but we got a lot of a look into the political system there, and I think it reinforced what we already thought about the Romulans. I'd love to see the Romulan society fleshed out even more, the way that we've gotten to know the Bajorans, or we've gotten to know the Cardassians, gotten to know the Klingons over the years. The Romulans, to me, feel like they're one of the major Star Trek races. If you think, like, who are the major races in Star Trek? We have the humans, the Vulcans, the Klingons, the Romulans. I think people would name the Romulans before they would name, you know, Bajorans or Cardassians or a lot of the other races that have been fleshed out even more. And yet we still just don't know a whole lot about them other than what's been put in novels.
It was really strange to me that we never got a Romulan next gen film.
Until Nemesis.
The closest we got until Nemesis, right. Well, I mean, until that one, we did so many other things until then.
Yeah.
We sort of mentioned them in Generations. But then suddenly Nemesis and then the new Star Trek film, it's all Romulans all the time.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's this feeling like, you know, we've reused the same elements. We've reused the same villain so many times. Who do we have that's familiar to people, but we haven't really used them? And so in Nemesis and in the JJ movie, they turned to Romulans. Although the JJ movie, Nemesis was a Romulan movie, really a Romulan movie, whereas the JJ movie's not really a Romulan movie. It's just a Romulan happens to be the villain in that movie. And
You know, and he's very unlike all the other Romulans we've ever seen.
Yeah, true. He's a different kind of Romulan.
Right. Yeah, whereas all the other Romulans we've seen were in this bureaucracy, he's completely away from it. He's just a minor. He's off on his own. He has his own agenda. We've seen Klingons with their own agenda, but this might be the first Romulan we've seen that was out only for themselves.
Yeah, probably. All the Romulans we've seen in the past have either been government officials, defectors from the government, members of the Tal Shiar. You don't really see like civilian Romulans anywhere that I can think of. I mean, maybe they've appeared here or there, but certainly not in any major level.
Well, so what about the future of Romulans then? I mean, obviously, we're talking about the new film. The new film blew up their planet.
Yeah, I know.
And assumedly, Remus is gone as well.
I would assume it's gone as well. And then Vulcan is also gone. So this is an interesting thing, which we mentioned briefly when we were talking about news earlier. Where would you like to see the Romulans go? Do you think that at least in the alternate timeline of the J.J. Abrams Star Trek, that this destruction of Romulus and Remus could bring together, finally facilitate this reunification that we've talked about over the years in Star Trek, and that Spock was trying to bring about in unification on the Next Generation?
Well, obviously, in the alternate timeline, Vulcan is gone and Romulus is still there.
And so Romulus is still there in the alternate timeline.
Right. This is what Nero was confused about in the film.
Okay.
And so the audience became confused. So in the alternate timeline, Vulcan's gone.
Yeah.
And in the prime timeline, Romulus is gone.
Okay. You see, it is confusing. Now these timelines are confusing. So you're right. Okay. So Nero thought that Romulus had been destroyed.
Right.
Okay.
Or even if Romulus was still there, he was still saying, you know, I don't care. I saw it destroyed. You know, this is...
Sorry, I got my reset buttons confused.
Yeah, I know, exactly. JJ! Lens flares!
Baird! Wait, wrong movie.
I know. So what I would like to see is, now that we sort of have gone back before the original series. So this is after the Romulan War. It wasn't the Romulan Federation War. This is probably predating the Federation still. After that war, but before any of the events of the original series, it would be interesting to see if, now that the Federation is more aware of Romulans because of Nero's incursion, if they make more of an effort to go out there and see what the Romulans are up to, maybe before the Romulans reach a higher state of development. Because if at this point the Federation, if we imagine the Federation and the Romulans being about on par, they won't have built up to such a great extent at this point, as they will, especially in TNG, but even by the original series. They might be a little weaker, they might be a little more willing, especially if there's another great villain out there for the next film, they might be more willing to become allies.
It's interesting. I wonder if, like you said, we are basically going back to before the events of the original series. If the Vulcans were to resettle on Romulus, if there were some type of reunification, if we could see the whole conflict between what will be the Federation and the Romulans never takes place. And not only does that not take place, but by the time we get into the Next Generation era, if we could see Romulans in Starfleet.
Yeah. I mean, that would be crazy to see that. I think a big part of this is, now that Spock, Prime Spock is there. In Unification, we saw Spock doing so much to bring together the Vulcans and Romulans. And I think he had almost achieved it.
Maybe.
He was getting close.
I don't know. It's hard to tell if he was really getting close or he thought he was getting close. I feel like he was pretty much being played.
Well, at any rate, he knows more now about the Romulan society than anyone in the TOS era knew about the Romulans.
Yes.
So the knowledge he could bring to this, and the drive he has to reunite the Romulans, could lead to that. Yeah, I mean, I had this idea of seeing a J.J. Abrams universe TNG show. I think that'd be really cool to get to, but that's probably years and years down the line.
Yeah, it would be interesting, though. I mean, it's kind of, if they're going to flesh out an alternate timeline, I wouldn't mind seeing what happens in the future, too.
Yeah.
You know, how do the changes to the timeline affect all of Star Trek that we know, all the way out, you know, to the end of Voyager? I don't necessarily want to see them redo TNG, redo DS9, redo Voyager, but I would like to know how those changes play out, you know, and how they affect things. So,
that'd be fantastic. So, a Voyager, an alternate reality Voyager series, where it's exactly the same, but Tuvok is a Romulan.
That's right. Oh, and so, and you're basically saying that Prime Spock in the JJ universe is like JJ's future guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
He knows things from the future that no one else knows.
He knows things.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's going to be fun to see what they do with the Romulans if they continue to do anything with them. Now, they may just drop them. You know, it could be that that's their plot device to reboot Star Trek, and then we're going to get something totally different in the next movie and the one after that, and we don't see the Romulans anymore. But I do hope that because they shook up the whole Romulan-Vulcan relationship and society so much in the first movie, I do hope that they resolve that and let us know what happens.
Yeah, definitely. I can't wait to see the future of Romulans, even if we only get it in the IDW comic series. I want to see what's next for the Romulans and the Vulcans. Well, Chris, I was glad we were able to talk about Romulans in a little bit more depth. Most of our features up till now have been focused on a specific movie or a TV show, so it's good to have more of a broad topic to cover.
Yeah, it is fun to talk about the different races in Star Trek, and the Romulans are one that I think get talked about a little bit less than, you know, say the Klingons or someone. Yeah. So it was fun to kind of go from start to finish with where we've seen them on Star Trek.
Yeah, definitely.
So if listeners have any comments on the Romulans or anything else we talked about today, we'd love to hear from you. Just hop over to trek.fm/contact to send us a message by text. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can do that too. Just call 646-652-TREK, and we would love to hear your voice. And we are always discussing Star Trek on Twitter. So just find us on Twitter, username TrekFM, and we'll talk to you all day and night about the Romulans if you want. And Greg, you've got your own account on Twitter as well.
I do. The things that don't make it on TrekFM make it on Greg Harbin. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N.
Yep, and you'll find me at C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y, and I'm talking about Star Trek and all the other non-Star Trek things that I like to talk about as well on there. So, also, you can, while we're talking about villains, we've talked about Trek Trivia before, and we just recently redid the format of Trek Trivia, and we're using the latest HTML5 fancy technology that I think they have in the 24th century, too. And the new quiz, it's a little bit more like a Flash, interactive Flash quiz, but there's no Flash, so you can play it on your iPhone, your iPad, wherever you want. It's got images, much more interactive, and if you miss the questions, you can go backtrack and keep going all the way through until you end and get that badge. So just hop over to trek.fm/trektrivia to play that. And the current quiz is, as we've been talking about, villains. Well, Greg, it's been another great Ready Room.
Yeah, Chris, I think it's time to stick a cloaking device in it, because the Ready Room is done.